When it comes to Utah's future, few issues are as important as addressing the gaps in educational attainment between those in the middle class and above and those lower-income Utahns who did not reach their educational potential. For that reason, Utah Foundation has launched a series of reports on how Utah can boost educational attainment. The first report in that series was released in February. It's called Beating the Odds: Post-Secondary Success for Adult, First-Generation, and Lower-Income Students. The report explores various means of promoting both student retention and completion of certificates and degrees. It focuses on subsets of students who have been less likely to attain higher levels of education and receive the socioeconomic benefits of that attainment. Utah Foundation Vice President and Research Director Sean Tigan and I sat down to talk over what we learned. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichard. Sean, Utah Foundation has really dedicated a big portion of its research effort here in the year 2021 to post-secondary educational attainment, because we believe that it's extraordinarily important based on various research we've done around education and economics, et cetera. But before we start talking about this topic, can you define post-secondary educational attainment? What do we mean by that phrase?
So what we mean by post-secondary educational attainment is basically that education level that a person or a population has achieved after high school. So it's degrees and certificates beyond receiving a high school diploma.
So we're not just talking about a bachelor's degree. It could be a skill certification or an associate's degree. All of that falls under this banner.
Yeah, going through a tech school, going through an apprenticeship, or going into college, any of those sorts of things are included in that post-secondary education arena.
One of the reasons why this is so important is because of its impact on future generations. An obvious thing would be the importance of having an educated workforce to the economy. The challenge in Utah, which is it's a beautiful challenge to have, but that is that we have more job openings than we can fill with the available workforce. Having a more educated workforce, whether through skill certifications or up to engineering degrees or what have you, is critical to filling those gaps and helping to move our economy along. But what about when we look to the future, when we look to children? What have you found on that front?
We performed some research in 2019 where we look at our peer states and we look at inputs into primary and secondary education. So, going from K through 12th grade and the outputs. And in terms of those outputs, if you look at the states across the nation, and you look at a whole host of demographic factors that have that are related in some way to educational outcomes, one of the biggest, most tightly knit of those demographic factors are whether the parents of these kids went to college. And so that was focusing specifically on college, a subset of that post-secondary educational attainment. That educational attainment really transcends the generations and rolls down to having kids that are more, for whatever reason, involved in work. This is more important than income. This is more important than if you've got two parents. This is more important than race and ethnicity. This is more important than any of that kind of stuff. It's that educational attainment of parents.
So we get a snowball effect through generations, which speaks to really why it's so important to address people that are in that first generation to get that snowball rolling.
Yeah. If you can do something now for an older population, whether or not they are even thinking about kids or whether they have kids, you're going to see some benefits that's going to pay dividends later on for when their kids are going through school and when they kind of make their decisions in middle school and in high school to what they're going to be doing afterwards.
And also in terms of those first gen students, that if there are obstacles that we can clear to help get those first generation students through college or through some kind of post-secondary program, then we're starting to get that process, that snowball effect rolling.
And it's tough. Like if you haven't had a parent that has kind of gone through that process, gotten into a tech school, gotten into a university somewhere, those familial advantages of having someone are huge. If you don't have somebody that hasn't made it through that process, A, you may not be inspired to do that yourself, but B, there are just, you don't know the secret language that it takes to get through the door. And that is it's a big barrier to success for students, particularly those who haven't had parents that have gone through that same kind of process in the past.
Let's talk about some of the other reasons why this is important. Economic mobility. You know, we talk about this a lot. You know, what are the factors that either lead somebody into poverty or maintain intergenerational poverty? Or by contrast, what are the boxes that you can check in life to make sure that you have a nice middle class or above type existence? Certainly the one that probably has the most promising public sector interface would be promoting post-secondary education. The idea of bringing greater economic mobility to individuals and allowing them to have a middle-class life is another key component here.
Having that the opportunity and having a lot of choices open up to you that wouldn't be there otherwise. I mean, if you don't have a high school diploma, or if you don't have that certification, or if you don't have that associate's degree, or bachelor's degree, you're restricted to far fewer possibilities in the future. You're also much more susceptible to the whims of the larger economy. If you see past recessions, the people that lost their jobs, they weren't people with PhDs. A large majority of them were people with either just high school diplomas or not even a high school diploma.
Right. And that's not unusual. Whenever there's an economic downturn, that group is if you look at historic trends, they're much more likely to have a higher unemployment rate when those crisis moments hit than the more educated portion of the population.
Yeah.
It was interesting. We just recently did a report looking at the state of Utah's Hispanic population. And really, the story of the Hispanic population is an educational attainment story, right? When we look at it, we see these big gaps in educational attainment that then lead to big gaps in income levels. Even though Utah's Hispanic population's income level is strong for the Mountain States region, when you compare it to the population at large, it's lower. But then if you look at the education levels, it's the old story. Less education equals less income.
Yeah. And you have, you've got an issue with this first generation students where there's the rate of educational attainment is so low for the Hispanic Latino population in the state. And so you've got a larger group of their children that are not, inspired either by their parents' educational successes, or they don't have that the secret language.
That plays into a subsequent report we'll be doing later on this year that we're calling Broadening Horizons, because it's really focused on how do we get people that are maybe in that first generation while they're still young, while they're still in the K-12 system, to start thinking beyond the level, or well beyond the level in some cases, of educational attainment that their parents enjoyed.
In that project, we will be talking about things like the College Access Advisors Program, which this focuses on college, but it is a program that is looking to get some support from some additional support from the legislature in 2021, and that's basically getting people in schools on a full-time basis that go around and provide the kind of information that people need, such as exam prep for schools and admissions, and also figuring out financial aid. And those sorts of things really are big hurdles, particularly for that first generation population?
A couple of other issues that come up. Obviously, when you have an education gap and you have an income gap, that leads to income inequality. So greater attainment would help to close that gap. If you look at it from the budgetary standpoint, if you've got more people engaged in the economic game at a higher level because they have higher levels of educational attainment, then you've got more taxpayers paying into the system, paying income taxes, and fewer people that are relying on the system to support them. You know, we could go on about all the benefits related to educational attainment, but it's very clear that this is just such a critical issue. If we can address it, we can really reap some benefits, not only in the short term, but also, as you know, as we talked about earlier, moving through the generations. Now let's turn to the new report, which focuses on what our post-secondary institutions are doing and can be doing to promote attainment among adult learners, low-income, and first-generation students. Now, again, this is in contrast to the report that we're working on for later, the Broadening Horizons, which is focused on the K-12 level. We're looking at what happens at that post-secondary level with this recent report. What did we learn, Sean?
We look at all these groups and looked at some of the barriers that were specific to them and ways to kind of overcome those barriers. But then we also looked more broadly at what are just some good practices that institutions around the state and around the nation are employing and maybe ought to be employing even more in order to help kind of lower those barriers instead of like creating some maze that people have to get through to finally achieve the holy grail, the bachelor's degree. And instead of doing that, let's get out to where the students are and help assist them in making their way to that bachelor's degree so that we can get more and more people educated and we can increase that educational attainment for Utahns and people across the nation.
And part of the picture here is a changing population. You know, when you've got a fast growing state like Utah, we've got a lot of people coming to the state. You know, a chunk of these people will be coming in with high skill levels and bringing those tools with them and benefiting from those tools. But then we also have, and this relates to the immigration picture that we were talking about earlier, when you have immigrants coming in that maybe don't even have a high school education, this really is turning out to be an issue that will be key to our future.
If you look at Colorado and you look at the population change maybe over the past 20 years, you might see that Colorado didn't really address the population change in terms of maybe reducing some of those barriers for first-generation students who now have children of their own, and you see some big gaps in educational attainment and big gaps in the outcomes for K-12 population.
So we could get into a situation where if we don't address the skills gaps, the education gaps, then potentially we get stuck with an economic gap that becomes an intergenerational thing.
Yeah, and if, is there a way to get ahead of this now? And one way to get ahead of this now is to be focusing on that population that maybe needs some of those barriers reduced. And those are, you know, adult learners and first generation students and lower income students.
Right, absolutely. Let's take adult learners for a second. What are the specific challenges that they have, and what would be some of the ways to address those challenges?
Yeah, so with an adult learner, you've got a household that is more likely to have a person going to school that has a full-time job. So you've got a full-time job, you might have a family. Let's say you've got a couple of kids at home, working full-time and having a couple of kids and a spouse or whomever. Those are some barriers to just, you know, that has maybe in the past been this kind of traditional, I'm going to go to school, I've got a class Monday through Friday from, you know, 10 to 11. That might not work for somebody that's going to school that has a very full life already, and they're seeking out some higher education to kind of step up the ladder in terms of economics and the household economics. The ways to approach that population might be you know, what we are experiencing on a really large scale with COVID, and that might be more opportunities via virtual learning, so that you maybe don't need to make a trip to a campus, you know, for one class and make that trip, you know, 5 days a week. There are opportunities like that. There are institutions around the nation that are shrinking the term. So you're getting this approach to education where you're not maybe going for 4 months for one class, but instead you're going for 2 months, or maybe you're going for three really full weekends to get through a class. And probably one of the biggest things, I think, is in terms of adult learners, a lot of times, if you've got somebody that's going back to school after they've been out in the workforce for a while, maybe they've been in the military, maybe they've had some jobs somewhere else, maybe they've got a little bit of post-secondary education already under their belt, but taking any kind of credentials and any kind of skills and translating those into degrees so that you can, or to credits, so that you can more quickly advance through a degree, as well as going through programs that are competency-based. So I already know some of this stuff. I go into a class, and if I can take the test and show that I already have these skills, I'll get the credit for that class and much more quickly advance in my degree than if I just need to keep my butt in the seat for, you know, those 4 months and slowly go through what's thought of a traditional path through education.
So there's a bit of a race against the clock aspect of this, it seems.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where if you make the road to completion shorter, then you're more likely to get to the end of that road.
I think that works for everybody to a certain extent, but it's particularly important for those adult learners who, with a whole lot of things, other things going on in life, they may not have that kind of time that they can, you can't even envision being in school part-time for 8 years to get a bachelor's degree. I mean, that's far too long. But if you can do something where you're getting through with some prior learning assessments, so you're getting some credits and you're getting through a little quicker with some of this competency-based stuff, and maybe, you know, do it in an easier way. If virtual learning doesn't work for everybody, but if it works for you, it might be a nice way to proceed, particularly if you don't have to make that drive to an institution every night or every other night.
Can we address the question of money? Obviously, if you are in that low income category, one of the hurdles that you are facing is money. What are some of the things that Utah is doing and can be doing to assist with that just financial needs-based challenge?
Yeah, so this started off with, you know, Weber State and Salt Lake Community College and getting their promise programs together. It's called Dream Weber at Weber State and the Salt Lake Community College Promise program, where they are really helping students piece together the federal money that they can get and the state money they can get, and then also providing a little bit of funding on top of that. So you can really provide access to students who otherwise wouldn't have been able to get the money together and can't even imagine spending $500 on a credit. It's like, I need to get my car fixed. I don't have $500 for a credit. So those programs were really great. And Utah followed that kind of approach with the Utah Promise Scholarship. That's the first need-based scholarship that Utah had. We'd been one of very few states with a very small amount of state need-based money. So there's that. In terms of money, there's also an adult learner grant program. And this is basically focusing on students that are, you know, we were talking about adult learners. This is people over 26, but it's also looking at people that are seeking out some kind of industry need. The Utah Board of Higher Education is going to figure that out.
As we look ahead and look to make investments, we don't want to just throw money out there and hope that it works.
There are a number of things Utah institutions are working on and that they're ramping up and trying to improve upon. So one of these is basically making sure that when students start taking classes, that they don't just drop out from the get-go because they're in some kind of remediation. So you're in a remedial class, you need this English class or you need this math class to take like really truly college courses because you didn't do maybe as well in high school and you didn't get the credits you needed for those really more advanced college classes. So one of the things you're doing is taking those sorts of classes and wrapping them into a larger course so that you are getting a real college experience at the same time as getting that kind of whatever that remediation maybe you need is. We're also doing some things in terms of guided pathways. I think gone are the days where you get this big book and you search through a book for the classes that you want. And you're like, yeah, I think I'll take this one and this one and this one. And then you end up at the end of your degree, if you finally get one, with way more classes than you ever needed. Or you never get a degree because you're like, oh my goodness, I've been kind of squandering all this time for the past 3 years. And I'm not close to any degree. And so this idea that you are on a pathway to success, that you maybe start in with this something called a meta major so that you take a math class that is probably going to align well with whatever major you decide on. Because, and honestly, it is good to mix, to jump around a little bit in terms of majors. You see that people that do jump around a little bit and change up their majors have a higher likelihood of completing. But there's also just all along the way, these wraparound services, people providing at the institution level, some assistance that students might need that maybe their parents would give them if they lived at home or if, you know, their parents had the time for them or whatever. But you're getting some assistance from an institution that provides, whether that's mental health assistance, whether that's, you know, a little bit of childcare services, a whole host of different things that institutions are doing to really help you make your way to the end. And the end of the day, the idea is that we focus on high impact practices. What are the things that provide the biggest return on investment in terms of providing people assistance?
And right, because funding is an infinite. One of the key findings of the report is the need for analysis to ensure that the limited funds that are available are being deployed effectively.
A lot of institutions are really delving into the data and doing a lot of analysis on what students are doing and how that translates into student success in terms of retention in school and completion at the end of the day. Utah State University is really doing something that's really pretty great about this. And they're looking at those amounts that they're spending on each of these programs and seeing who really gets the most impact from each of these services. And it turns out that like there are a lot of students that you could provide student services to, and you know, it's gonna be great for them. But at the end of the day, those students are going to be around next semester anyway, and they kind of know who those students are. But there are certain students that if a roadblock gets put up, then they're out. And so they're working on a way to really focus on spending those extra resources on those students that are one broken car or one mental health episode or whatever away from just dropping out forever and not ever getting that degree. And so there's those sorts of things. And this is all wrapped up with something that some people refer to as intrusive advising, where you're basically, you've got this institution that is kind of like maybe a parent to you in some ways. They know that you haven't paid your tuition yet. And so they're going to send you a couple texts that say, hey, tuition's coming up. You have to pay it by this day. And then they get somebody to call you and say, hey, you haven't paid tuition. You're supposed to pay today. And you find out maybe that person is, you know, they can't pay it because they don't have the money for it. And they're short $400 for some other thing that came up in their life. And institutions are now saying, hey, you know what? We're going to give you the $400. Let's get you registered. Let's keep you going. And for a lot of people, that makes a huge difference between stopping out maybe one semester that turns into stopping out forever to that continuing that momentum where we're going to keep this person in for another semester. And maybe that's the momentum they need to keep them in until the end of their degree.
Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. Thanks, Peter.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.